on guard. Pray. Allez.
Welcome to the Tokyo 2020 Fencing Podcast, episode 19. I'm Karim, and joining me, as always, Dave Baker. Dave, what a start to the new year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Bash. We're ticking off the fencing events one by one, and this might be my favourite of the lot.
Well, there you go. We're here to focus on men's foil and the massive one, the CIP Paris World Cup. We'll start, as always, with the team events. Going into the competition, USA, France, Italy and Korea held the top four automatic provisional spots. In fact, USA already qualified. The zonal spots were with Hong Kong, Russia, Egypt and Canada. At the team event itself, the USA took another gold medal in team men's foil, beating Italy in the final, and France beat Hong Kong, yes, Hong Kong, in the bronze medal match. Another great result for the Hong Kong team. So, Dave, well, let's take a look at the four. We know the USA had already booked their place at Tokyo 2020, but There's another story in the top four that we have to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's just cover off the easy ones. France did well with bronze. They are now qualified for the Olympic Games, and likewise with Italy with the silver medal. They are qualified mathematically for the Olympic Games. So that's great news. So obviously Hong Kong moving into the top four ahead of Korea, their Asian counterparts, by 2 points with that.
And they faced each other in the quarterfinals as well.
They did. I didn't see the match. Again, we were on the wrong time zone and with pretty patchy internet. But it'll be one of those matches I want to rewatch. But that's actually, you know, had a fairly material impact, just in terms of, I think, looking at, I mean, holding Korea back has actually opened the door for another European team.
And why do you say that? How, I mean, look, let's just quickly look at the summary. Hong Kong finishing fourth in the end, Korea going out to Hong Kong 45-41 in the quarterfinals, and ending up having to face Russia in the playoff for fifth place. Is that what you're alluding to?
Yeah, absolutely. So what it does mean is that Russia have the ability to overtake both of these teams in the final World Cup of the season. So, and obviously what that would mean is that would push an Asian team out of the top four, which would mean only one of Hong Kong or Korea could qualify, firstly, and that also would give the chance for another European team to qualify. And most likely that's Germany.
So let me get my head around this. Hong Kong have done a great job. They've beaten the Korean team in the quarterfinals, and they've in doing so, they've jumped up into the top four. But because Korea then lost to Russia in the 5th-6th playoff, it's not all plain sailing for Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, you could say that Hong Kong could have lost to Korea, and Korea could have gone further ahead, and then Hong Kong guaranteeing themselves, you know, that first Asian place. Now you kind of have two Asian teams effectively on the cusp, but with Russia able to spoil the day. So the maths isn't that hard. So effectively, Russia need third in Cairo to overtake Hong Kong, to overtake Hong Kong and take that final top four place. And that's assuming that Hong Kong don't make the semifinals as well. And then if Hong Kong finish fourth, Russia needs silver. And then a strong Korean result can change this as well. But effectively, a good Russian result could really open it up. And maybe only one of those two Asian teams would qualify.
So again, we're in this situation where, because we've got one World Cup left to go, the permutations are there for all to see. And you mentioned that if Russia get a good result, well, they are due one, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Although they have been messing around with the teams, though. It's not hasn't all been plain sailing. I think it was another set of fences in the team I mean, they still did very well, don't get me wrong, finishing fifth. But I think it was basically the Russian junior team was fencing in Paris, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we'll come back onto that when we talk about the individual, because that is it is on my list of questions for you. But I have one question right now with the teams. You're saying that USA, France and Italy have qualified for the Olympic Games.
Yes.
So from what you're saying here, so have Russia, right?
No. Germany could overtake Russia if they win the final World Cup.
Right, so let's just clarify that. If Germany win the last World Cup in Cairo, then Russia have to do better than sixth place to overtake them again.
Sixth or better, yep.
Yeah, okay. And then, all right, brilliant.
And then the funny thing as well is there actually is still a hope, and you'll love this, Bash, although I'm not teasing, I promise, there is still a hope for Great Britain.
Right.
Who would need a gold or a silver medal.
Yeah.
They would need Russia to also be up in that bronze, you know, to overtake those two Asian teams.
Yeah.
And they would also need none of those Asian teams to do very well. And they would also need Germany to have a bad day as well.
So you're saying Great Britain have also definitely qualified for Tokyo 2020.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's Georgina, if you're listening, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I'm pretty sure Johnny Davis would be less than amused with that last comment. No, so what you're saying, basically what you're saying is that the whole thing's still wide open because of the good result from Hong Kong.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've, you know, it's one of those ones where, you know, if you were the tactician, you know, you'd think, you know, if you're a bit, if you thought that, you know, people weren't as honest as you'd like in this sport. You know, the actual tactical move for Hong Kong was probably to lose that match to Korea and have a strong Korea well inside the top four. But clearly this is a Hong Kong team that wants to go out and win every single match that they can. And they're a great team with great athletes. And, you know, I hope they're at the Olympic Games and I hope they do very well.
Well, and the other thing as well, I mean, you know, I know what you're saying, that, you know, the gamesmanship of it all is there for all to see. But the other thing about Hong Kong is that they're going to want to have a good ranking to avoid those big teams above them on the way through to a potential medal match at Tokyo.
I think that's a really good point. I think the difference from between being fifth and sixth is massive, you know, to get that semi-final, you know, or to have that quarter-final against someone about your level. Compared with, say, Italy, is a very different match. And then, hey, if you're in the semi-final, everyone gets a bit nervous, keep score close, anything can happen, right? So, yeah, I think that's particularly important in men's foil where those top three teams are very, very strong.
Mm. Okay, so obviously we can't just talk about one zone here because of the influences their results have on other zones, but a simple yes-no answer. Can Japan qualify through the team route as things stand?
Only just possible. So they need to win. They need to win Cairo to overtake Korea or Hong Kong. So a win would overtake them both. Assuming that Hong Kong and Korea have results below sixth, I think. So again, let's say improbable, but you'd think that Japan men's foil would be a leading candidate for zonal places, which I'm sure we'll talk to. Interestingly, China could still overtake Korea as well with a win. Again, improbable, but just you know, weirder things have happened. So we'll leave that out there just in case some weird things happen.
So I mean, you'd rather be in the spots of Hong Kong, Korea and Russia at the moment, but you're going to be wanting to win. But then you've got these teams, Japan, China, Germany and Great Britain, who've just got to go throw the kitchen sink at it and just go for it and try and win, knocking out some teams above you on the way at the next World Cup in Cairo. So let's move straight on to the African zone. Egypt, well, they finished 12th in Paris. they're doing more than enough, as you've said in previous podcasts, they're doing more than enough to stay inside the top 16, and they're by far the best African team. They're going to the Olympics, aren't they?
They've qualified, mathematically qualified. They are going to the Olympic Games, and they've done it all season. They've done about that. They're ninth on my rankings. They're great. Good on them.
Well, same thing for Canada, really. United States nailed on. There's no way they're going to drop out of the top four. Well, it's not mathematically possible for them to be even caught in first place, I believe. Well, certainly ahead of the qualification ending. So Canada made a 15th in Paris. They're also doing enough.
Yep, doing fine. You know, I think we spoke about last time we were a bit concerned that that there might be a bonus place from the Pan Am zone. That result from Canada is great, and their rivals didn't really step up. There is still a threat from Brazil, but Brazil need to finish fourth to overtake Canada. And I think realistically you'd say that's unlikely, especially given that their world ranking is 16, which means that they've got a pretty tough 32 match, and then they run into the USA or France in the 16. So you'd like, you know, I'd say Canada are 99% of the way to the Olympic Games.
Brilliant stuff. So in summary, after the Paris World Cup, the top four spots are held by the USA, France and Italy, and now Hong Kong, who've overtaken Korea. Korea now occupy the Asian zonal spot, and the European spot goes to Russia, with Egypt holding on to the African spot, along with Canada holding on to the Pan American spot. So we move on to the individual tournament. Going into the event, the European places were held by Marcus Mepstead of Great Britain and Benjamin Kleibrink of Germany. It's Takahiro Shikine of Japan and Haiwei Chen of China holding the Asian spots. Guillaume Toldo of Brazil holds the Pan American spot, and it's Mohamed Samande of Tunisia going into the event with the African spot. The results in Paris for the individual, well, three names that we all have regularly seen on the podium at World Cups, and one who's been promising this result for a long time. Nick Itkin of the USA takes his first World Cup victory. The USA fencer is absolutely on fire at the moment. He beat Daniele Garozzo in the final. Alexei Cheremisinov of Russia getting another great individual result, along with Enzo Lafort of France, who picked up the bronze medal. So, do you know what? I want to leave Europe to last for one reason only, but let's start with Asia. Shikine making a 64, Chen making a 32. Have things changed with the Asian zonal qualification spots in the individual tournament?
No, not a huge amount, to be honest. There's still a pretty substantial gap between Saito and Shikine, or Matsuyama and Shikine, or Miyake Shikine. Yeah, pretty stable, to be honest.
Do you think with two Grand Prix and a World Cup left to go, I mean, mathematically it's possible, but do you think there's any hope for Saito and Matsuyama to overtake Shikine?
Yeah, it just needs medals. You know, we're now getting to the point where a last eight doesn't really cut it anymore. You know, it really does need to be, need to be up there on the podium, accepting your medal and your flowers to have a chance. Because the gap's big. You know, the gap's not, you know, the gap's over 20 points. So you got to be doing something major. You know, you can't eat away at this incrementally anymore. It's really got to be material results.
And it's the same for Chen. Because, I mean, just in case our audience don't know, once you get to individual qualification, only one fencer from each country can qualify. So it can't be two Japanese fencers, even if they are the top two Asians in the adjusted Olympic rankings. But it's the same for China, right? Chen is on 51 points, and you have to drop down quite some way to the next Chinese athlete. So is he safe?
Yeah, I mean, in a similar position. You're exactly right, Bash. It's Huang is 25 points behind Chen. That's gigantic. That's a medal at a GP. So yes, is the answer. Absolutely. That's you'd say those are pretty nailed on, and I think you'd nearly lock them in if you didn't see a big result in Torino.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to Pan Am. The Brazilian Guillaume Toldo went into the competition as the holder of the spot. Went out in the 96, didn't make the second day. But again, he's looking unchallenged because those above him are all from the USA. So the only threat would be, you know, if Canada were to drop out. But he's the leading Pan American apart from the USA fencers who qualify by team.
Yeah, Toldo's been strong all season. Had a good Pan Ams. And, yeah, as you're right, has just been, you know, aside from, you know, the superstars in the USA team, just by far the strongest Pan Am fencer. And gosh, there's no one really challenging. So, and I mean, Canada being in the team event helps. But even if they weren't there, he'd still be by far. It'd be a similar situation to the Japanese and Chinese situation that he'd be 20, 30 points ahead of the nearest rival. So, yeah. He's doing well, doing really well.
And I hate to sound like a broken record, but Samandi's looking pretty strong as well. He does have a slight challenge, to be fair, from his teammate Mohamed Fajani, but Fajani needs to get a good result. Even though the gap is slightly smaller, he needs to get a really good result to overturn Samandi.
Yeah, I am. We know Ayub Fajani very well. He's a referee and a good friend of mine. Yeah, hasn't quite pulled it off this season, I think he'd admit. As you say, the gap's closer. That's now just, you know, if you can get a couple of 32s or one result at a GP. But, I mean, Samandi's a class athlete. I think he'd probably, over the course of the season, you'd argue that Samandi's been stronger. So I'd say, yeah, definitely favourite.
Yeah, I mean, still worth keeping an eye on Fajani at those three remaining competitions, especially the Grand Prix. If he can get a couple of rounds further, that could become quite tasty, especially if he does it in Turin at the next event. So on to Europe. I wanted to save this for last for one reason. I told you so, Dave. I told you so. Marcus Mepstead came into the competition leading the European race. In fact, he was the leading individual qualifier from Benjamin Kleibrink. Mepstead made the 32. Kleibrink only made the 64. But I said, watch out for Alex Šupanich from the Czech Republic. He just over the last year just seems to be finding his way through to the latter stages of competition. But a top eight finish in Paris, he can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's an absolute class athlete, lovely guy as well. I think yeah, that number one shows that marker can happen. And now the gap's getting smaller. So the gap's 8 points. It's actually 8 plus 3 because he's got to get over his fifth best result. So it's actually an 11-point gap to Benny Kleibrink. But there's a couple of GPs to go, and if you've got someone that's actually capable of making that last couple of rounds of the tableau, then anything can happen. You know, this is not guys squabbling in the 64, especially when you looked at Lavador didn't make the second day, Zeiss, Poland didn't make the second day. Šupanich, Chup, I think you're not wrong. If Kleibrink wasn't looking over his shoulder before, he's definitely doing it now.
I think Mepstead needs to be looking over his shoulder as well, because he needs to get a result at one of those GPs, I think, to be clear and safe. I mean, if you like, it's. I think Shoup is going to make it one way or t'other. And so I think it then becomes a race between Kleibrink and Mepstead. And I suppose that race is one that Mepstead's looking like he could win.
I think if you, the way I'd look at it is that basically there's three competitions to go and you get a last 64 tableau and we're going to highlight five or six names. And we're going to highlight Mepstead, Kleibrink, Šupanich, Lavador, Zeiss, Cruz, maybe. And the further you keep highlighting that name along the tableau, the more excited we're going to get, especially in Torino and especially in Anaheim. You know, it's now getting like, you know, we're not going to have a look at 64 names anymore. We're really now looking at five names, which we've got to, you know, squeeze into a two-person bucket. So it's quite exciting, mate. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. There are still more than just three names on that European chasing list. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think it'll be an interesting discussion between you and I after the next event in the Touring Grand Prix.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you what, with only one team event to go, Bash, I've got a question for you. Let's talk about this Russian team. So, the Russian team that they ran in Paris had obviously Alexey Cheremisinov at a statesmanlike 34, and then two Borodashevs at 19, and then Milinkov at 19. Mm-hmm. And there were events where they ran all three juniors with Cheremisinov on the bench. And I was with a Russian in Havana, and we were chatting about this, who's reasonably good buddies with Cheremisinov. And he sent him a message saying, how's it feel, fencing with these kids? And he sent back a photo of Scrooge McDuck with his three baby nephews.
Right.
So my question to you is, what is the Russian team going to look like? No Safin, no Jerebchenko, Arslanov, Rigin, do these guys not exist anymore? What is Ilga Mamonov doing, Bash, and what Russian team are we going to see in Tokyo?
Okay, I think it's a reasonable question. First thing, before I answer that one, I have to say the Russians are being particularly brave, and Ilga Mamonov especially, in picking those teams, given the situation that they're in at the moment. I think they probably are qualified, or they probably will qualify. But actually, for the Russian team, I think it makes a difference, as much as it does for Hong Kong and Korea, about where they're ranked when they go into the Olympic Games. So this is a tactic not without risk to play around with the team. But I think that the decision that's been made is that team, that stable team, got stale. Cheremisinov, Safin, Zurabchenko, Arslanov, Regan, even Akhmetov was in there for some period of time, but he seems to have fallen off the fallen out of favour. Cheremisinov, I think, is a name on the list. I cannot believe for one second that neither Safin nor Zurabchenko will be on the team at the Olympic Games. I believe that one of them, at least, more likely to be Safin in my book, although Zurabchenko has fenced well in team events in recent times, where he hasn't been so good previously. But I don't think you can rule out Kirill Borodashev. I think he was the best fencer at the last World Cup in the team.
Yep.
So I think Kirill Borodashev is in there. Anton Borodashev got seventh place in the individual in Paris. In Paris. This is not some namby-pamby, satellite
CIP, yeah.
Yes, this is the big one. This is the massive men's foil event, and he got seventh place. That result, perhaps and one more, I think could put both the Borodashev twins on that team. I think they could both be on the team, and then it's a question of, do you play Safin or do you play Zurabchenko? I think Mamadov has said Cheremisinov is there. He's on the team. He may be 34 years young, but he's a great team fencer. He can pull a rabbit out of a hat when required. He gets under the skin of his opponents.
Yeah.
So he's a good person to have on your team. I don't know the answer to the question, but what I will say is I think Kirill Borodashev will be on the team, and one of Safin and Zurabchenko will join Cheremisinov. The fourth spot, I think, is still up for grabs, but I think Anton Borodashev has done a good job.
And is that a good enough team to retain their Olympic gold medal?
If the Olympics was today, I'd say no, but it's not. We've still got six and a bit months to go. I think that if you look at the USA team a year ago, there's no way you would have said Nick Itkin is a shoo-in for the team.
Yeah, good point. Very good point.
Today, he's number one on the list. He's number one. At the moment, on current form, he is their best friend. So Race, a very, very close second. Race and Bowden, very close.
Nick
second.
Nick and Thames is a beast. Absolute beast. But
again, the best fencer in Bonn at the World Cup for the USA team. I think the Russians are playing this game of, to the youngsters, prove yourself. Get yourself on the team. But I don't want you just to prove yourself to get yourself on the team. When you're on that team, you must do well. And, you know, yes, there's an element of inexperience, but I think there's also an element of nothing to fear. Mm. There's no fear with these youngsters. And I don't know. I think it's very exciting. And I think that the other teams are looking at those Russians playing around and thinking, we don't really want to draw them. And that already is 2-3 points in a team match.
Yeah. So that basket case you'd rather not touch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, quite. So what do you think? I'm going to turn it around on you.
Yeah, I think your point is exactly right on that the Olympics is not today. And they're certainly playing it that we are qualified. I've refereed the Borodachevs through their junior career, both of the twins, and they've been the most phenomenal junior athletes. How quickly they've stepped up to senior events has staggered me. I watched all of Bonn and Kirill Borodachev in the team event in Bonn was just phenomenal and mature and was anchoring at legs, right? Mm. So clearly the ability's there. And you've got 6 months to bash a team out and get them ready for the games. You know, not like they haven't had upsets before. It's certainly a team to watch.
Yeah, certainly is. So Russia, interesting topic as well. But just a reminder, Mepstead, Kleibrink have the European spots in the individual. Shikine has the top Asian spot along with Chen of China, Toldo with the Pan American spot, and Samande with the African spot. That's a men's foil wrapped up after that Paris World Cup. Next up, David, Turin Grand Prix, but then two other competitions before Olympic qualification is done.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we'll all be waiting for is the World Cup in Cairo individual event, but clearly the all-important final team event that we'll be watching very closely. Hopefully they'll have live stream. Otherwise we'll be refreshing madly. And then off to Anaheim for the final GP of the season where we can decide our individual places.
Fantastic. Very exciting stuff. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We've got a host of other podcasts going on during the next few days. But thanks for joining us for now.